Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Diane Hamilton. Welcome to Leaders Playbook, a show about how to drive transformational impact in your organization. We talk with innovative leaders across multiple industries to hear about the best tools, resources, practices, and strategies to help you reach the top of your game. I can't wait to share our leaders' insights with you. Hello, everyone. I am your host, Dr. Diane Hamilton, and I am the CEO of Tenera. I also serve on the board of advisors for the Global Mentor Network. Thank you for joining us. Our guest today is Megan Burkhart of Comerica Bank, a financial services company. Megan is their EVP and Chief Human Resources Officer. Join me as we hear from Megan regarding the challenges of compensation in the current market. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you, Diane. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I was looking forward to this, and I know you have quite an impressive background. I was looking at all the things you've done, and I think a lot of people could benefit from hearing how you reached such a level of success. So can you just share a little bit of your backstory?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I have been with Comerica Bank actually my whole career. I did not set out to be in business. I did not set out to be in human resources, but I actually started off with a degree in psychology and thought I would go down more of a clinical path. And then learned about industrial psychology, which is really kind of psychology applied to the workplace and to organizations. And that was super interesting to me. And that's what led me to a career in human resources. I actually joined Comerica right out of college as a compensation analyst. And at the time, I really didn't know what that was, but I was just looking for a foot in the door into human resources. And it turned out to be a great, great learning opportunity. In compensation, you learn a lot about different parts of the organization because you're looking to understand the different roles and how, you know, what they do and how they fit into the organizational structure. So it really is a great learning ground. I held several roles in compensation, kind of progressive roles. I actually left HR for a couple of years, which gave me some good perspective for another role elsewhere in the bank. And that actually made me realize how much I wanted to be back in HR. I was in a position where I had kind of a bird's eye view of the company, and it made me realize that human resources is absolutely critical to the smooth functioning of a company and to the culture and everything that makes it a place where people want to come and want to stay. And so I went back to human resources. I held a generalist role for several years. And then I was head of compensation, director of compensation, until I took my current position as chief human resources officer about 10 years ago.
Well, you know, that's so funny. I could remember when I tried to get into the education and teaching online industry, and I took the first teaching job I could teach, and it was government and something I hadn't, you know, but I wanted to get in, you know, and you take these jobs and maybe you're not perfect for it, but you know, they teach you so much. So that's great. And I love the psychology background since that's basically what I study in terms of curiosity and perception. So you and I could spend all night talking about that.
Absolutely. But,
yeah. It's so important to how people get along in the workplace. I mean, I've always thought people should always take a sales course or always take a psychology course, and all those things really help people become more well-rounded. And
that's
you
right.
Really, yeah, your background shows that you've done so many things, and you also have served as a board member for Xcel Energy. And I found that interesting because on my other radio show, I talked to a lot of guests about women on boards and HR members being on boards and all these kinds of things, because they tend to not have any culture experts or that kind of thing on the boards. They're financial experts and that kind of thing, which they need.
Right, of course.
What is your opinion on that? Do you think, you know, what's your insight on whether we need HR represented on the board at that level?
I think it's really helpful. Of course, I'm probably biased, and I'm a new board member. I joined the Xcel board back in June of this year. That's been a really exciting kind of new learning opportunity for me. So Comerica has had someone with an HR background on the board for as long as I can remember. And frankly, Xcel did too before I was nominated to the board. So I think some companies have long realized that having someone with that expertise is helpful from an executive comp perspective, from a governance perspective. But more and more, I think people are realizing that the culture aspect, kind of the attraction and retention, especially in the last several years with COVID, and sort of the talent transformation that we've gone through as a country, you know, things have changed dramatically. And so I think having someone that has been through that and can help and has helped navigate that and can help provide some perspective on what companies could be thinking about or provide some perspective on what they're doing to attract and retain and grow their workforce in the future, I think that human resources voice, that CHRO voice, can be incredibly valuable on a board.
I do too. And I think you're ahead of it because I don't think a lot of companies do have HR represented, or they hire out in consulting forms in different ways. And that it's interesting to see what's going to happen with the transformation of the boards, if we'll see more of a representation there. Because I mean, they always talk about people being hired for their knowledge and fired for their behaviors and all the issues with engagement and all the things that we're trying to improve. And if, you know, if you're not dealing with that at all, at the highest level, I think, you know, the culture is huge. So I think what you were talking about is really interesting in terms of your background in the compensation and what employees want and what the changes have been since COVID, because I've had a few people on the show where we've talked a little bit about how that's really changing. You know, employees are kind of telling you what they want now in terms of you telling them what they can have.
Yeah.
That is a unique way of, you know, at least since I've been in the Mad Men world when I started. So what are they expressing in terms of their desire for perks, compensation, and what changes are you guys making? What's happening with all that?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I think colleagues are much more willing to ask for what they want and to be a little more assertive around maybe what they're seeing in the marketplace. So colleagues are also much more likely to talk to each other about compensation these days. And while that's not something that a lot of us sort of grew up with, I think it's just the way things are today. And so that also plays into it as well. But I think it feels very much like right now, colleagues and employees, you know, candidates are a bit in the driver's seat. And it doesn't feel like that's changing. I think companies have to be realistic. They have to listen, right? And then be realistic about what they can and can't do. And I find that if you are transparent with someone about here's what I can do for you and here's what I can't and here's why, that goes a long way, right? You know, if it's just a black box and they don't understand why decisions are being made, then colleagues tend to get frustrated. And I can understand that, right? But if you can be open and transparent and maybe give some, if not all, that they're looking for, you know, then I think that helps a lot. So I think the other thing that's critical to do is to really be attentive to your top performers and hopefully sort of be ahead of the game with them in terms of managers really kind of cultivating a relationship with them where they can talk about what they're looking for, whether it's compensation or career development or any number of things, so that you're not surprised, right? When that top performer comes in and says, I have a competitive offer. You don't want to be in that position because then you're really very much on the defensive. If you are in more of a, let's talk about this and let, you know, I want to be part of your career journey and tell me what's important to you. And if managers are having those kinds of conversations with top performers, you have a much better chance of both meeting their expectations, but also, you know, keeping them with your organization.
It's so true. You know, the days of, because I said so, this is what you get are kind of over. And I see a lot of companies really don't give responses to why things are happening. And I teach so many courses still for different universities. And one of the things we talk about is how important it is to explain why what you're doing in your job is important to the overall goals of the company. And they often don't know what they're doing, why they're even doing it. And that can lead to low engagement. And I actually work for a company that gave surveys every year and never told us what they did with it. And so I think, you know, you can survey, but you have to say, hey, look what we took from this. Look what we did with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I'm a big believer in, if you're going to ask people for their feedback, you have to share back with them, right? Otherwise, there's no motivation for them to share their feedback in the future. And I think it's important to share both what you learned that might be strengths, but also what you learned that were opportunities and what you're doing about them, right? You know, so you really have to close that loop. Otherwise, it feels very one way to the colleague, and that doesn't feel good.
In some of the classes I teach, I have the students do like a personal SWOT analysis, as you were saying, your strengths and your opportunities and all that. I think companies do it as a whole, but I think it's really helpful for people to do it individually. The surveys kind of make us look at these opportunities and these things that we need to work on. And I don't know if you saw that the Pulse survey from PwC, but it was something I found was kind of interesting about career growth and upskilling and how much those were valued as perks nowadays. Because sometimes you think you just throw money at people and that's all it's going to take. But we found that it doesn't necessarily happen. So I'm just curious, how can organizations reimagine their benefit packages? And what are some of the things you think employees want as benefits?
Yeah, no, I think that's it's a great question. There's the kind of career growth and career path, you know, kind of career pathing and recognizing that there are other opportunities for colleagues in the future, I think is a really powerful retention tool. If they don't see a path ahead at the company, and that path ahead could be sideways, it could in some cases be stepping back to get some experience that will then help you move forward. It could be, you know, up, down, sideways. But knowing that there are opportunities for them if they are interested, I think is really important. We've actually added the value of training programs and kind of career development to our total reward statement, which we provide to colleagues annually. So it's we're really thinking about that development as part of our total rewards package. So there's compensation, there's retirement, there's incentives, there's benefits, and there's career development. And we think that that is really important. So that's something that we added a couple of years ago because we're trying to think of it very holistically. I don't know if colleagues see that as a benefit, but it's absolutely something that they expect and they want. And if they don't feel like they have those opportunities to continue to grow with your organization, it's highly likely that they'll go look for those opportunities somewhere else. So, and then for really kind of purely from a benefits perspective, I do think it's important to think about it holistically and to understand that not everybody values the same thing. So we've really made some enhancements to our benefit programs in the last couple of years. Certainly during COVID, we were trying new things, as many were, to really keep colleagues safe, to keep them engaged and motivated and connected to the organization, even though many of them weren't necessarily in the office at that time. So things like paid family leave, dramatically enhanced bereavement leave when someone suffers a loss, that for this next year, we've just announced that we're not passing on any healthcare cost increase to colleagues. Things like that, you know, we're trying to sort of touch a variety of different things because, again, we know that not everybody's going to take advantage of every one of those things. We're also going to launch a survey, back to your point about surveys, later this year that we've never done before. That's really a targeted survey about what's important to colleagues from a rewards perspective. And we'll be touching on all of those aspects, compensation, benefit programs, things we have, things we don't yet have, as well as development and career opportunities and things like that. Really trying to understand what's most important to our colleagues so that as we move forward, we can decide whether we're investing our dollars in the right places or not and make changes that align with what our colleagues want. So we're excited to see what we learn from that.
You know, you touched on so many important things and you reminded me of something. I'm going to be speaking at a Forbes event soon, and we're talking about flattening of organizations and how that has been an impact in terms of just the way you can motivate people if there's no jobs going up, if you take out all the middlemen.
Yeah.
I'm curious about your input on that. What do you do in that situation if they know there's not really a lot of upward mobility to motivate people?
Right.
I mean, you touched
right.
on some of them.
It really is about sort of retraining people to not think about development as just going up, right? But to help them recognize that there can be career growth and sort of new learnings that can lead to that upward mobility if that's what they're looking for. But sometimes it's a little bit of a different path. So we talk about project work and people taking on kind of leadership of projects or being part of projects. We've got a lot of different initiatives going on where we're looking for change agents around the bank. And so, you know, a colleague can raise their hand and say, I'll help be a change agent for that particular effort or initiative. That gives them exposure. It gives them a chance to practice some leadership skills that maybe they otherwise wouldn't get a chance to practice in their day-to-day role. And then we advertise our career mobility opportunities. Again, in some cases, they might be lateral, but in some cases, it could be a promotional opportunity in an area of the bank that's something sort of different for them. We really are focused on trying to lay out for colleagues what different career paths could look like. We're not exactly where we want to be yet, but we think that that's going to be really critical going forward. But again, it is a retraining of managers and colleagues both to say career development does not always mean a promotion. So there are lots of other ways to help people grow in their career.
It's interesting to see what people want. You know, some people are super competitive. They want that upward path. When I teach a lot of my courses, the solution students offer is just, we'll just pay them more, you know, and that's not easy for a lot of companies. And I remember speaking at SHRM where there were discussions about turbulence regarding, there were just requests that's going to break compensation budgets. And that happens with a lot of companies. And with inflation, you were talking about you're cutting back you're not making employees take that extra money that it costs for insurance. There's all these rising costs. So what's worked and maybe not worked for you with dealing with this? I mean, you said not everything works that you've tried. And it always helps us sometimes to hear that what doesn't work, but what has worked that's really in that, like, we don't have the money for that, but we're going to try this realm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think so. We have had to set our compensation budgets higher, you know, and I think most businesses have, right? It's just the reality. And as you are, you know, as we're thinking about attracting in new colleagues, it's really important. The market has become very competitive. So as we bring in new colleagues, in some cases, we're bringing them in maybe at a higher rate than our existing colleagues are. So it's really critical to pay attention to that and to be sort of, again, kind of back to that being on the offensive versus on the defensive about recognizing when you start to see some kind of adjustments that need to be made, going ahead and saying, this is the right business decision to make these adjustments, because otherwise we're going to, you know, it's going to lead to other, going to lead to more turnover and things like that. So what I think has worked for us is sort of targeting specific job groups when we notice that there is more of a broad-based adjustment that needs to be made. We have not done sort of across-the-board adjustments, you know, across the company, but we've done it more on a targeted basis by job group, using the market data, using what we're learning about hiring new colleagues from the outside. And where we can, we're not necessarily just doing it in a kind of a peanut butter way, but taking into account individual performance as well. You know, you want to make sure that, again, kind of back to your top performers and making sure that they feel really valued and engaged. And so I think, you know, sometimes you need to make some sort of across the board adjustments by job groups, but to the extent that you take into consideration individual performance and make those top performers feel really good about it, I think that's helpful too.
I agree with everything you're saying. And I'm thinking of some of the top performers. I've worked in sales for decades, you know, and you saw that salespeople often made a lot more than a lot of other people. And then people would sometimes be a little upset that salespeople got certain perks. We had a ping pong table no one else had, or whatever it was.
Yes.
But now you're saying everybody shares what they have. Everybody's like, they're texting their W-2 forms basically to each other. So how do you give extra to those who really deserve it without the people who think they deserve it getting their feathers ruffled?
That's a great question. It's not easy. We do, you know, we do rely on incentives to help differentiate quite a bit too. It can't all be in salary. It can't all be in kind of the, you know, the perks and things like that. Because a lot of it should be performance-based, right? And if I am someone who is really driving, you know, revenue for the company and have the right behaviors and the right risk management approach and all of those things, I should be rewarded for that. The company is, you know, the company is enhanced by that. I should also benefit from that. So, you know, we try and make thoughtful decisions around salary, benefits, those kinds of things. But incentives is really where top performers can differentiate. And it's hard for someone else to argue with that, right? Because they're not necessarily making the same contribution. And it is also kind of back to that transparency. If someone says, I don't think it's fair that that job makes more than mine, sometimes you have to explain there is a market at play here, right? And the market pays different rates for different things. If you're interested in that kind of a job, let's talk about how you can get there. And then that comes back to that career development and growth. And so it's kind of redirecting, you know, to how can you get from here to there rather than kind of staying focused on the negative.
And just in the work I did in perception, it was really fascinating to me to just talk to people about perception in general, because you could tell the same thing to two people and they hear completely different things. So that's one of the hardest parts, I imagine, for HR, because you're explaining something very clearly and yet two people will hear it differently.
Absolutely.
And they'll think, yeah. Yeah. So that's a really big challenge I've seen. But as we're talking about compensation, it made me remember when I actually will receive a pension someday. And I wasn't not for being a teacher, but pensions used to be the thing. Everybody got one and the day it seemed like. It really was a motivation for a lot of people to stick with a company. And I know that there's a lot of job hopping and things going along. And if you job hopped in the past, you lost your pension. Is there something that you're doing to retain people that works like the old pensions used to do?
Yeah, well, we're actually, you're right. Most pension plans have gone away, you know, and companies have migrated to different kinds of retirement programs. We are actually a little unusual in that we still do have a defined benefit pension plan. It is not the defined benefit plans of former days that were could be quite lucrative, but it is very competitive, especially by today's standards. And when you take our 401k and our pension plan and combine those, we have a 75th percentile retirement benefit. But what breaks my heart sometimes is when I'm talking to someone and they don't realize it, right? You know, they're not as attentive to it maybe as people were in the past. So some of it's about marketing that to our own colleagues and making sure they really understand the value of that, so that if they are kind of thinking about a competitive offer, They're not just thinking about salary. They're not even just thinking about salary plus bonus. They're really thinking about the entire rewards package, including retirement, including all the benefits, you know, some of which I mentioned before. We want them to be thinking about it holistically. And that's where that total reward statement sometimes comes in handy. But, you know, so I think that in the absence of a pension plan, I do think a lot of companies are sort of relying more on their 401k and trying to make that as, you know, sometimes there's a match or other things that they're trying to do. But frankly, that's not, I mean, people can take their 401k and leave, right? You know, so there isn't as much of a retention hook as there used to be with those pension plans. You know, we're seeing some usage of cash retention awards, some usage of stock retention awards. But I really think sometimes those are, it's a short-term action, right? You know, and you might keep someone for a couple of years, but if you're really not getting to the root of what it is they're looking for and kind of back to that career growth and what's the path that they're on and do they recognize that they're valued and what's the culture, you know, of your organization and is it a culture that makes them feel valued? All of those things, I think, are the things that you have to focus on that are going to really keep people for the long term. Some of the other retention vehicles can just be a little bit more of a stopgap measure, but you may not ultimately keep them from leaving.
As you were talking about all of that, I'm thinking about what you said earlier about how you it's a lateral move to do this and to do that as instead of going up the ladder. And that could be the reward in itself. As I remember going to this Forbes CMO summit years ago, they were talking about things that I found really interesting at the time. I mean, it's kind of more common now, but they didn't have a problem with the CMOs up on stage were talking about, well, you know, if somebody wants to leave and we don't offer something that they need in our company, then we have an open door policy. You could come back. And, you know, and I remember you left. That was the end of it. So is this a good thing that we let people go and come back and forth? Are there advantages, disadvantages? What do you think of that?
Yeah, frankly, I think it's smart to keep in contact. If you have people that leave and you considered it regrettable that they left, then I think it's smart to keep in contact with those people. We have some managers that do that really well. And a lot of times colleagues will find that maybe the grass isn't always greener, right? You know, and so there are opportunities for them to come back. We tend to look at those on sort of a case-by-case basis, right? You want to make sure that it's someone that you want to welcome back to your company. But frankly, most people are, right? You know, so I think it's smart. Again, a lot of managers do a good job of that. I kind of wish more of them did. But also, there are certain job categories, like maybe people that have been out of school for a couple of years, they've been through a training program, and they might get picked off by competitors. And we keep, since we've got such an investment in those folks because of that training program, we actually do some proactive outreach to them 6-12 months later to see how they're doing and are they, you know, how are things going? And just kind of keep the lines of communication open so that they know that there's an open door if they are potentially interested in coming back. Because once you've made that investment in someone, you'd really like to be able to kind of reap the benefits of that investment in them. So, you know, there are certain job categories where we make a proactive outreach, and then there are others where we sort of want managers to keep that relationship going. And we are seeing, I'd say there's been a little bit more activity in the last couple of years with people sort of wanting to come back. So,
yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking the training I went through in pharmaceutical sales was just super intense. I think it was 2 years of, I can't imagine how much money they spent on me. And so, but you know, another thing that happened when I was in that job though, is they would set our forecasts every year. And they wanted you to come in at about 105% of forecast. So let's say you came in 110, they'd go, oh, okay, well, they made too much money. So we'll increase their forecast so they don't make so much and then get closer to 105. But if you came in low, they go, oh, well, we don't want to make them not motivated. So we'll drop their forecast. And, you know, so for me, it wasn't super motivational because it didn't matter if I worked hard or whatever, because they were going to adjust my forecast. Is that kind of thing still happening? What do you think of that does to motivation? I'm curious how you deal with motivation and bonuses and commissions.
No, I definitely see what you're saying. It's like, so if you work harder, then congratulations, your goals get raised, right? And if you don't work as hard, then you get to keep the same goals. So that maybe isn't the best way to motivate people. Right. You know, as a bank, we do have quite a few different kinds of incentive programs just based on the different roles that people have and kind of how the market pays those different kinds of roles. But I would say a trend for us has been that moving more to incentive programs where the funding, so we're really distinguishing between funding and what the funding is based on an individual distribution. The funding piece is generally based on kind of business unit performance. So, you know, think about sort of a much higher level than individual performance. The funding is going to be based on the overall results for the business, which makes sense, right? Because that's ultimately what the bank is being, that reflects how the bank is performing overall. And so that line of business performance drives the funding, and then the individual performance, contribution, behaviors, you know, a variety of metrics are used to evaluate each individual's performance and what piece of that pie they get, right? So some people are going to get a much larger share of that funding than others, but it has to be based on sort of a basket of metrics, right? Not just did you hit your sales goal, but did you do it the right way? Are you exhibiting our core values? Are your risk management behaviors aligned with, you know, with our beliefs and practices? All of those things are important. So it's a more holistic view, I think, than maybe has been taken in the past.
When I was in pharmaceutical sales, they would rate us on our concern for impact. In other words, kind of our emotional intelligence level, which was super interesting to me at the time, because this was in the 80s. Yeah. And, you know, they were way ahead.
They were way ahead, yeah.
And no one didn't write the book until 95 that people paid attention to, right? So I think it's interesting to see the philosophy of the organizations of how they decide what they're going to do in terms of compensation. And sometimes it's not just impacted by the core culture, but it's also impacted by the competition. And sometimes your competition offers all these things that just are so good that how do you keep people and how do you determine like what's fair and what have you done to keep in line with what everybody else is doing without, you know, giving up on your core values?
Right. It's definitely a balancing act. You know, I would say that if we're thinking about sort of compensation philosophy, we do try, you know, we structure our salary ranges and things around market median, right? And we do a lot of work to try and get as good of a finger on the pulse of the market as we can for different roles. That's frankly been a lot harder in the last probably 18 months because I feel like things are moving so quickly and there's a bit of a, you know, I'm not sure all the data that we have is fully capturing what's going on in the market right now. So you also have to marry that with, again, what you're hearing from candidates, what you're hearing from recruiters, you know, what you're actually seeing sort of live out there. But we do we try and structure our compensation, you know, our salary ranges around market median. And frankly, we try to target sort of an experienced person's salary around that midpoint, which would be market median. But we are realizing that if you're going out and you're trying either, maybe you've got someone on your team already who is a top performer, anchoring their pay to median probably isn't the smartest thing to do because someone else is going to be willing to pay them a premium to come to their organization. So we need to be thoughtful about that for our own folks. And also when we're out in the market recruiting people, you can't expect to get a top market performer for a kind of a median level salary. So it's, you know, and you have to choose where you're going to do that. You can't necessarily expect to pay above median for all positions. So it's really, where is that investment going to make the biggest difference for the business and kind of, and where can we afford to kind of be more kind of in line with that median position? But as I kind of mentioned incentives before, incentives are where, you know, we do structure our incentives so that, so if someone is a top performer and the financial results and everything else is there, then their pay can absolutely go above median, closer to that 75th percentile or whatever the appropriate benchmark is. So the incentives help drive that up, but that's based on, again, business results and individual contribution.
It comes back to me sometimes when you talk about all this to my experience years ago at the pharmaceutical job, just because I think about how I looked at it. I loved the company, but I wasn't crazy about the job I was in. I had this sense of I had the golden handcuffs. You know, you don't want to leave because you love the company. You get this great pay. But it wasn't a really good match for the actual job description I was in. And I didn't know enough to look for other options. So I think it's tough because you don't know what everybody else, what's out there. Or,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what do you tell your employees so that they know that maybe
we
ask questions?
That's really important. We do try and encourage people to get a little bit outside of their, you know, their, what they do on a day-to-day basis and maybe the line of business that they're part of, to really understand a little bit more about other parts of the bank and how their piece fits into it, but what else is out there? I think one way that I've seen be really helpful is when you've got something like a leadership development program, and we have a couple of different versions of a leadership development program, depending on the level within the organization. And, you know, of course, we're picking folks for those programs that we think have the potential to do more. But oftentimes they come into those programs, especially if they're, you know, relatively early or even kind of mid-career, if they've spent their entire career in one part of the organization, the growth they have by interacting with, say, 50 other people from different parts of the company and realizing that what they do is just one piece of a much larger picture, the perspective that builds. And I think the kind of the eye-opening nature of it, that it's like, oh, well, I could go do, you know, I'm doing this today, but I could take the skills I have and translate them to any number of different opportunities. So I think like a focused program like that has those kinds of benefits. But how do you make that come alive for all your colleagues when you can't put everybody through a leadership development program, right? So that's the trick. And that's where I think the, you know, a lot of the resources that we have that colleagues can take advantage of from a learning and training. And if we can do more with helping come up with a kind of a programmatic way where they can say, I'm here today and I want to go there. How do I get from here to there? That's what we're working on.
You know, and that ties so well into what we're doing at Global Mentor Network. You know, we're trying to mentor at scale. You know, you want everybody to get this training that, yep. and opportunity awareness, right?
Right.
And yeah. It's interesting in different fields. I mean, I've worked in everything from, you know, hospitality to, as I said, pharmaceuticals and banking. I was in banking for a long time, but I'm thinking in education. I worked in education space for a long time. And I think that particular area was really interesting to me because I'd worked for people for years before I got promoted. And then when I got promoted, I could see how much I made versus the people who worked for me. And they made more than I did sometimes. And I'm thinking, that's interesting how it just because they were with the company longer. How do you feel about that? Is that something that should people be rewarded for how long they're with the company? Or if you're in a management position, should you make more than the people you manage? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's hard to give kind of a one answer to that because it really does depend. There are situations where you've got technical expertise, right? And that those technical experts might be in high demand. They might have a really rare skill set and they might make more than the person they report to, right? But they're also on a different track. Or it might be that they make more in salary, but their manager has a different bonus opportunity and they also have stock, right? So you do have to look at it kind of holistically. I think that was one of the benefits of growing up in compensation. You see everything and you learn to be a little bit more clinical about it, you know, and sort of have some perspective. You understand why it is what it is. And that's also kind of comes back to that. How can you be transparent and help explain to people why people are paid the way they are paid? And for that manager who maybe takes a new opportunity and finds that they have people reporting to them that make more, it's important to help them understand why, right? And again, kind of think about, are there pieces and parts that do differentiate? You know, it's not uncommon, but a lot of it is based on highly specialized skill. I would say highly specialized skill more than tenure, right? You know, I don't know that tenure in and of itself should necessarily drive, you know, a higher pay. It certainly has an influence on it, but it probably also comes to skill set and market demand and all of those things too.
For me, the biggest reason that this would even be an issue would be the amount of respect or something that I felt if it was because of a good reason, like what you said, or if it's just like, this is the cut and dry, this is how we do it. Too bad if you're good or not, would turn me off. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that would not, if there doesn't feel like there's a good legitimate reason for it, then that's going to create, you know, it's going to create certainly some dissatisfaction and probably not lead to the best. You know, it's I think that's going to limit that manager's effectiveness to some degree, probably is something that needs to be addressed.
I totally agree. And I think that there's a lot of things that we've touched on in terms of compensation, but I wanted to at least hit on equity compensation because I know some companies are offering that. Yeah. Are we going to see more of that? Less of that? What do you think?
I don't know that we're going to see a tremendous amount more. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. I do think that companies are looking for ways to retain people and tie them to company performance. Stock is a great way to do that. But where we used to have maybe some broad-based programs that went to a far greater number of colleagues and maybe were smaller amounts, I think you're certainly seeing a lot less of that these days because companies have to be careful with that resource. You know, there's an expense impact to it. There's also, you know, publicly traded companies have to get shareholder approval for their stock plan. So they don't have an unlimited supply of stock that they can use for equity programs. So they really have to target how they want to use that and where they want to use it. For certain positions and certain levels of the organization, it is a kind of an integral part of that total compensation package. And it does help both to retain folks, but also to tie them to the company's performance. So will we see a lot more of it? I don't know that we'll see it expanding a lot, but I don't think it's going away either.
I've had stock in companies I've worked for in the past because you feel like you have that skin in the game. And I think employees learned a little bit though from Enron and some of the others that if you have all your money in your company and the company goes down, then you lose your retirement and your job. So what kind of counseling do you do to help employees realize how much they should have and what's a good
plan? Yeah. We do not allow colleagues to make investments in company stock in our 401k. I think a lot of companies went that direction sort of post the crisis that you mentioned. So I think that's important. You want colleagues to be making their investments that make sense for them and their risk profile, and company stock's not really, that really shouldn't be part of that consideration. So at least for us, we don't allow employees to make contributions in company stock in the 401k program. However, we do have an employee stock purchase program where they can purchase company stock, at a discounted rate and have that sort of tie to the company performance and hopefully growth over time. But we would always encourage colleagues to max out their 401k before they make that other kind of investment, right? So make sure that it's something that fits within their own financial situation. We've started just in the last year, kind of another benefit that we've added is offering broad-based financial counseling to colleagues through a partner so that all colleagues have access to much better sort of planning capabilities than we were offering before. So they can really be thoughtful about, are they investing their 401k the right way? Do they want to participate in Comerica's employee stock purchase plan? Coming back to that pension, making sure that they recognize how valuable that pension is if they stay with the company. So I think that financial counseling and connecting them with experts, we hope is really going to bear fruit for them, but also help them realize the value of the package that we're providing.
Any of this training that you've talked about, any of this background of understanding why things are offered and what the value is, it all ties back to what we talked about at the beginning, the psychology. It blends in with everything in the business world. So I'm just curious what kind of psychology based training do you guys do in terms of do you offer emotional intelligence tests or DISC or whatever it is that's out in the market? And how do you train people to just psychologically understand the whole thing so that they are better at packages?
Right. I'd say we have that woven into different programs in different ways. Certainly we offer 360 feedback, in certain situations and as part of our development programs, we often do team Myers-Briggs training, right? So people understand different people's styles and how to work more effectively together. Situational leadership is actually part of our, right? Sort of how do you kind of meeting people where they are, depending on the situation and what's going on. That's part of our management training program. We have a certificate, it's 5 certificate that we encourage all managers to go through. And frankly, any colleague who isn't a manager, but wants to be a manager someday can take advantage of those training programs as well. In each one of those 5 certificates, there's something like situational leadership or MBTI or one of those things that kind of helps build that kind of that leadership capability and that understanding about how to relate to other people, and how you have to tailor your approach, right? Depending on the situation and depending on who you're talking to. And that's, I think, a lot of what psychology comes down to is how do you relate better, to other people and help them be more effective.
I totally agree. And whether it's DISC, I was a D or a ESTJ as a Myers-Briggs, whatever I've been, what it's taught me really is not, you kind of know what you are if you're taking a self-assessment. But what I think it really does is it helps you understand what everybody else, what they are and what their preferences are. And I think all that's so critical. And I think you and I could talk about that forever, but I know we're trying to compensation. And this has been so wonderful to have you on the show, Megan. You've shared so many insights. I just really want to thank you for being part of Leaders Playbook because I think so many people have learned valuable information from you today.
Thank you. Yeah, it was my pleasure to be here. It was a lot of fun. And I too am an ESTJ. So there you go.
Well, no wonder. I knew there was something I liked about you. There it is. Yeah. Well, thank you, Megan. That was so helpful. And we really enjoyed having you on the show. And thank you for joining us for another episode of Leaders Playbook.
Thank you, Diane.
We always love to hear from you. If you have any questions or comments, head over to gmn.net and say hello. That's where you can sign up for our monthly newsletter. Be sure to follow Global Mentor Network on Twitter and LinkedIn. And don't forget to head over to wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe for more tips to elevate your impact. While you're at it, leave a rating and comment. It helps us to keep improving the podcast for you. See you next time for another episode of Leaders Playbook.